Hi, thanks for joining us on Hometown to Hollywood. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parent's Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is novelist Melissa de la Cruz. Melissa is the number one New York Times, Publishers Weekly, and IndieBound best-selling author of many critically acclaimed and award-winning novels for readers of all ages. Her books have also topped the USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and LA Times bestseller lists, and they've been published in over 20 countries. Melissa's the author of the Blue Bloods series, with 3 million copies in print, the Beach Lane series, the Ashley's Project series, the Heart of Dread series, and the semi-autobiographical novel Fresh Off the Boat. She's also the author of The Isle of the Lost, the prequel to the Disney Channel original movie The Descendants, which spent 37 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, 15 of those weeks at number one, and has over 1 million copies in print, as well as author of its sequel, Return to the Isle of the Lost. Melissa, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's so great to be here, Bonnie. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. You know, I really think that's the longest introduction I've ever made for a guest.
I have a long resume.
You know, you are so prolific, and I know that you're a parent, too. So, yes. So how do you do that? What's your secret?
Oh, God. You know, I think, my career and motherhood kind of took off at the same time, so I had no choice but to kind of go all in on both. So it's been a busy 10 years, I would say.
I like that, all in on both.
Yeah, you know, you can't, you know, I try. I think what it is I don't have any guilt, you know, but if I'm working, I'm working, and if I'm with my kid, I'm with my kid.
Did you see Bad Moms?
No, I haven't, because I was away when my friends all went to see it, and there was like a group of moms from school, and they all went together, and I missed it.
Well, so you're sad. Also probably too busy like writing and touring. And
no,
stuff.
No, I like to see movies. I like to see movies. I saw Bridget Jones's Baby.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. Okay, all right. I'm just thinking you might like that because it's. You know, it's about that struggle to be, you know.
Completely. Like that stressful, like you got to do everything right. And I think what I've taken away from what my mom said is, like, first of all, no guilt. And second of all, good enough is good enough.
Yes. Done is better than perfect.
That's right. You know, and as long as we don't hold ourselves to this crazy standard, that's fine. So.
We have the same mantra. I love that. Well, how did you get started as a novelist? Was it something that you grew up knowing you wanted to do?
I always wanted to be a writer of books, definitely. But I had no idea how anybody goes about that. Like, I thought all authors were either 90 years old or dead. You know, it was not a profession.
Male, right?
Was yeah, that or issue too? Male. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. But when I was 11, I read the Sweet Valley High series of books. And I read an article about the girls who wrote those books. I mean, they were created by Francine Pascal, who was in her 30s. But the books were actually written by young women in their 20s, you know, who were just out of college. And they were ghostwriters. Their names appeared, you know, not on the cover, but inside the flap.
Like in the acknowledgments.
And the acknowledgments, probably. And one of these young women was 22. And I remember thinking, I'm 11, she's 22. You know, maybe in 11 years, I could do that job. I could be a novelist, too. So, yeah. So that's when I kind of thought, you know, maybe this is something that I could do. And then when I went to college, I took a day job right after it, but I was always writing. And I got an agent, the first year out. And then kind of, you know, through those years, you know, submitted books, submitted proposals, and sold my first novel when I was 27.
It literally gave me chills when you talked about your 11-year-old self discovering that a 22-year-old had written a novel that you loved, because I remember, well, number one, it points so much to the importance of role modeling.
Oh, yeah.
How incredibly important it is for people to be out there to see themselves, to see someone who looks like them.
Definitely.
Doing something that they dream of doing.
Oh, completely.
It's
completely.
So powerful.
Yeah.
I remember being in middle school and reading The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton.
Yes.
Who was a 17-year-old girl who wrote that powerful novel, and that was my moment like that. Like,
Yeah.
This is doable now. I've never written a novel, but it made me feel confident that I could be a writer.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I love Essie Hinton, too.
Oh,
yes.
She's so good.
Yeah, she's great.
So this is a podcast about Hollywood.
Okay.
And because of that, I want to focus a little bit on the projects that you've done that intersect with film and TV, because I think that's really, really interesting, and it's unusual.
Sure.
So here's a little mind-bending fun fact for all the listeners out there.
Okay.
Even though The Isle of the Lost is officially a prequel to Disney Descendants, you came to the set on the first week of filming to get to know the actors and get to know the characters and get a sense of them so that you could then go home and write the book.
Yes.
And we met on set.
Yes, we did. I still remember. Yeah.
I'm going, so who are you? What are you doing here? You're like, well, I'm going to go home and write a
write the book.
Write the book.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And that's amazing. You know, what was that like to be on set, like, trying to get to know these actors and these characters, get them in your head and in your body to then go home and make up stories about them or make up a story that made sense with what you were watching?
It was really exciting. We had an idea for how we wanted to do the prequel, so I think we had a little bit of the plot, but we definitely wanted to go on set and see the world, see the costumes, meet the actors, see how, you know, the performances were, like what kind of like personalities they had, and then put that into the book. And it was great. It was really exciting. You know, I mean, every film set is really exciting, and it was just wonderful to see Dove and Sophia in their costumes, you know, as these characters. You know, it was the first time we really saw it, because they had shown us sketches, and they had shown us, you know, kind of like what they were thinking. But, you know, it doesn't really come to life until you see it in front of you. And when I write the books, I picture, you know, Dove and Sophia and Cameron and Boo Boo in those roles. You know, that is, they are the characters for me.
Well, it totally comes through. I mean, when I read, you know, The Isle of the Lost, and I know those kids and those characters intimately, it was just so real. It just felt so real, and it was so fun. And you also had, like, all these little Easter eggs hidden in there. You had all these little, like...
I'm
like,
a big Disney nerd, so...
Totally, like, Disney nerd, like hidden jokes and things that were so fun to find. I should probably reread the book, because now that we're heading into the second movie. So how did you get the gig to write the Descendants novels? Did Disney just approach your agent or you, or how did that happen?
It was really funny. So Disney's been my publisher for 14 years.
Ugh.
You know, we've done the big vampire series with them. And then they moved out here. So some of publishing is in LA. Some of it is still in New York. But the head of Disney Consumer Products, Gene Mosier, who has become a friend through the years of publishing with Disney, asked me out to lunch. And I thought, I thought it was just girlfriends getting together, you know, girls' lunch. And at the end of lunch, he said, we've got this project. And we were wondering if you'd be interested in being part of it. And I said, yeah, let me know what it is. And she pitched me Descendants. And I said, oh my God, this is so crazy. Because that morning, I had just told my agent I wanted to do my next series as a big fairy tale retelling. And I wanted to do it with a big corporate partner.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so weird. You know, it was like the secret manifesting or something. So I said, you know, here I am. I want to do fairy tales. And you're handing me the whole Disney universe. So I really felt like, you know, it was meant to be. That it was like a karmic destiny, that we were both kind of in the mindset of thinking, this is what people want next, this is something that I wanted to do, this is something that they wanted to do. So I just said, yeah, definitely, I'm all in, I want to do that. You know, I love Disney, and you know, I knew those movies by heart. My kid was 8 years old at the time, so he had just finished watching all of them, you know, like kind of schooling her in Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and Beauty and the Beast, so... It was really fun, and I really wanted to do a good job. I wanted it to, you know, kind of be something that somebody who loved the movies could pick up and see that reverence for, you know, that that universe.
You know, the love really shows. I mean, because the characters are just drawn with such complexity and such
you.
Love.
Definitely. Those kids, you know, when you say villain kids, it's like, You know, it's like you just feel bad for the kids of Cruella and Maleficent and Jafar, you know, Evil Queen. It's like, what's it like to grow up as, you know, the kid of these awful villains?
Yeah, so. And you paint a really complex, rich picture of that. And it's really a joy to read. So after you'd written the prequel, did you then check in with the Descendants screenwriters, Josanne McGibbon and Sarah Parriott, to see what was happening for Descendants 2 so that you could write a novel that would make sense with, like, the basic story points? Because people have a sense that they link up, but they kind of do and they kind of don't, right?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, we're all kind of in the same world. Like, the books and the movies work together and are in the timeline, the same timeline. But, you know, it is different. You know, the universe of the book, because, you know, I don't have a budget. Your imagination is my budget. You know, we can go to worlds that, you know, maybe would be too expensive to show on screen or something. But they definitely exist in the same world. But yeah, like, you know, after we turned in the book, they said, you know, we can see it. Like, it's definitely leading up to the movie, but it's also its own thing. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of always kept that, where, you know, it is something that if you love the movie, you can read the book. If you read the book, you can watch the movie. So it's very... you know, works together that way, but they're still kind of, you know, separate things. You know, the movie is a musical, it's, you know, on your screen, and the book is something that you read and, you know, kind of use your imagination to picture all the things that happen.
I like that. Well, they are their own universes, mm-hmm. and they actually also completely stand alone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you never got a chance to see mm-hmm. the movies and you only read the books, you'd have a completely whole and satisfying experience. Yeah. You wouldn't in any way feel like you're missing anything, because you wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And the same is true of the movies. So that's really neat. Like, they do stand alone, but they also mm-hmm. kind of make the other one even richer.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the hope, definitely.
Which is super, super cool. I loved reading The Isle of the Lost. Oh, I really did. I'm one of those sort of nonfiction geeks, and I read a lot of nonfiction. I don't read a lot of fiction these days, but I loved it. I love disappearing into that world.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read Return to the Isle of the Lost. I know it's been out for a little while. I haven't read that one yet.
Yeah, it's okay.
So anyway, just wanted to mm-hmm. thank you for that, because that was a fun thing for me to be able to do, is read a novel where my kid's work and her spirit was sort of showing up in those pages.
I don't. There's a Liv and Maddie joke in the book.
There is. And I got fell off my chair when I read it. I'm like, this is so funny. This is so
cute. We're big Liv and Maddie fans, so I wanted to put that in.
Well, me too. Thank you. Yeah, Dove loved that, by the way.
Oh, that's awesome.
She totally loved that. Well, so take us inside some of the process that you went through when you were writing these two novels. Yeah. How did that work? How did you, like,
the script was already written, so definitely we read a script first to see, you know, where in the narrative storyline we can place our story. And that's why we decided on the prequel, because we don't want to give away anything that happens in the movie, and we can explore the backgrounds of the characters, kind of like how they came to be, what their life was like on the island. So we do that, and I turn in like a couple of outline drafts to Disney, to my publisher, to the channel, to franchise and creative. So, you know, it is kind of a big responsibility, and there's a lot of Disney heads looking at it, and we got to please everybody. But, you know, it's a really good and interesting process. I enjoy it. You know, we collaborated with a lot of people. Make sure.
So one of the things that, mm-hmm. that was so astonishing to me mm-hmm. was, like, okay, so we meet on set, mm-hmm. you're there taking notes and absorbing the energy of the different characters. You go mm-hmm. home, mm-hmm. you work mm-hmm. like a mad woman mm-hmm. and write this huge amazing novel. And the novel comes out like in mm-hmm. May, I think.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
the movie doesn't come out until the last day of July. Mm-hmm. And so because the movie took so mm-hmm. long with all the special effects and all the editing and stuff.
Yeah.
And so the book comes out before the movie. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And it really mm-hmm. did feel like a prequel. And mm-hmm. so people were able to go mm-hmm. and buy the book and get what felt like genuine background mm-hmm. and then go watch the movie.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was definitely, you know, it's a crazy schedule, but we make it work.
I can't even imagine the deadlines you must have been under. Oh, man. Now, you were a former fashion and beauty editor.
Yes,
which
I was.
Is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you also grew up in the Philippines, mm-hmm. which are two completely unrelated facts about your life. But do you think any of those two, mm-hmm. you know, life experiences, parts of your life have informed your work as a novelist in any way?
You know, I think when you work professionally as a writer, in the industry. So I was a fashion editor and a beauty editor, but I was also a writer for the magazines as well. I think you learn how to collaborate with people. So while I don't think it, like, you know, it goes into my work so much, but kind of how I work with people is what I learned from being a journalist and being a fashion beauty editor.
That's that's cool, because, I mean, I think the cliche we all have in our heads about novelists is that they're working up in some some tower all alone somewhere, and it's a completely isolated, solitary pursuit. But, you know, at least with the books we're talking about, clearly that wasn't the case.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not, and I think, you know, it's good to be somebody who can collaborate and who can work with editors and can work with, you know, almost like a client, you know, and like, here's what we want to do, and then here's a story we want to tell. So
you decide when you're a kid that you want to become a writer, maybe a novelist, and you go to college, and were you an English major?
I was an English and art history major, yes.
So then you're, okay, I'm going to go out to the world and be a writer, and is that how you got your into the fashion jobs, was because you were writing for magazines at school?
Yes. So the first editor I ever met, Jeff Klosky, who is now the head of Riverhead, but back then was a young editor, and he discovered David Sedaris, David Eggers. He was like, you know, kind of this young up-and-coming editor. He read my book and then said, I want to take you to lunch. And so we had lunch, and he said, I'm not going to buy your book. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what is this, a date? And he was like, but I want to tell you to keep writing and to encourage you to try to publish short pieces and to see journalism as a way into novel writing. And he said, you should write for magazines and newspapers. And so I took that advice pretty much to heart, and I started writing for a lot of, you know, like little magazines and some newspapers in New York, and then kind of building my way up, you know, getting a portfolio, learning how to become a journalist. You know, because he was like, nobody's going to, you know, pay you to write a book when you haven't proven you can write 1,000, you know, word article, you know, so.
That is really sound advice. Yeah. I mean, because one of the things that I run across when I run into people who say, oh, yeah, you know, I want to write a book, or I want to be a writer, it's like they have this idea that they have to wait to be inspired.
Yeah.
And all of the experience I have as a writer is like, that doesn't work real well.
No, you just have to do the work, right?
You just have to show up.
Yeah, show up.
And
definitely,
sit there until it's done. And I would think that the discipline and the experience and the habits that you would have picked up having to hit deadlines for shorter magazine pieces would have been invaluable to your work later.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, learning how to meet a deadline is a huge, huge thing you have to learn if you want to work professionally.
Well, and I like the idea too, I think it's really common, especially with young people who want to be writers or young people who want to be anything, really.
Creative.
Yeah, a creative of some sort or another, that they feel like they have to go straight for the thing that they know they want.
Yeah.
When in fact, how most people get somewhere is more of a circuitous route.
Oh, completely.
Very few people end, like, start straight with what they want to do or where they end up. Like, there's a path.
Oh, definitely. There's a path. You want to keep on the path. You know, you don't want to give up on the path, but you want to be on the path. And, you know, maybe starting, you know, what kind of novel would a 22-year-old publish, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, definitely they are publishing some 22-year-olds, but you can tell, like, sometimes you need a little seasoning, you know? You need a little life, a little experience.
You know, that is a great parallel with acting, you know, because if you want to be a really fine actor, frankly, you need some life experiences to draw from.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing for writers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, yes, there are some brilliant 22-year-old
writers. Oh, yeah,
writers,
definitely.
No
definitely.
Question.
Yeah.
But also, you know, writing to me is one of those wonderful careers where, in general, the older you get, the better you get.
Oh, definitely.
And how beautiful is that?
Yeah. No, and you can start at any age. Which is also really nice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can start halfway through the journey.
Yes.
So, what are some of the most challenging things about writing a book that's linked with established characters versus most of the work you've done? I mean, you've got, I don't even know how many series you've got, never mind like standalone novels, but most of the time, if you're a novelist, you get to simply make up the characters and do what you want to with them. But when you're writing for established characters, like, what's the difference there?
Yeah, you know, Well, it is just another editor, I would say. And it, maybe it's somebody, I mean, especially in an established universe, you know, there are certain things. You know, I tried to explain this. I was like, you know, every... It's not that they tell you what to do, because what it is every solution on the page and every story, those are all mine. Mm-hmm. So basically what happens is I turn in something and then they say, this works for us, this doesn't. And then, you know, we just keep working on what works, but everything is my idea.
Of course, because you're the creator.
Yeah, so that's what it is. It's just some kind of, like, it's an editing. It's like an edited process. And then at some point, you know, they do just have to leave you alone to write the book, because it's still the same process of writing a book. And even though the characters were not mine originally, you know, they become mine.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So then they just kind of let me go and do what I do. And then they come back and say, this works for us, this doesn't, you know, or can we have more of this? Can we not go here? Can we go here instead? And I'll be like, okay. And Keith always says, it's like, you know, all right, how about a bridge over here? You know, it's like, let's take this path over there, you know, so.
Well, they really do. The novels really do become their own world and their own universe. And to do that, they have to make sense internally and have their own integrity, which is something that only the writer can provide.
Yeah.
Ultimately. Yeah. So what does your life look like on a daily basis as a novelist? What do your days look like?
Yeah. So, we get up, and my husband and I, we have one daughter, so he takes her to school, but I get her ready for school. So they leave the house at about 8 o'clock, and once they're out the door, you know, I kind of go to my office, which is in my home, and work in pajamas, which is great. So I pretty much work from 8 to about 1 o'clock. And do a lot of writing then. I like being sharp in the morning, and I like to kind of work on last night's writing. So I do all my writing, you know, in the morning, and then I have lunch, and then I do a lot of admin in the afternoon. So that's when I return emails, that's when I do interviews, that's when I do like all the promotional and just kind of business stuff that you have to get done. Because I find I can't write after lunch. So that's kind of my time also. Like, I go to the gym. And then I come back and I start working again about 4 o'clock. And then we kind of take a break for dinner and homework. And then when Maddie goes to bed, or if I'm on deadline, I go back to work around 8 o'clock. And then I work from 8 to about 11. But that's when I'm on deadline. If I'm not on deadline, you know, I probably work until about 7-8 o'clock. So
I love hearing you break it down like that, because I think there's a lot of mystery about how novels get written and how books get published. And it's like, frankly, it's just a lot of time and work and showing
up, sitting in front of your desk for a couple of hours. What I've done is I've found that I can write, you know, like when it's going, when the flow is going, you can, you know, write 3,000 words in that 4 hours that you have, you know. But if it's not going, you're just sitting there for 8 hours and you got 200 words. And some people do that, but I find I just try to get myself to that point where it's easy. So that's why I've broken up my writing in the morning and the evening, basically.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've been experimenting myself that way. And I finally realized that I needed to schedule the podcast interviews for the afternoon to protect my morning for writing.
There you go.
It's the same thing. It's like, my brain's just kind of, you know.
Yeah. I just think the morning is good. Yeah. The afternoon, it's kind of like, you know, that's why they took siestas, right?
That's exactly right. Bring back the siesta. Well, so you have a brand new book coming out this week. It's called Something in Between. I cannot wait to read it.
Yay. Thank you.
Got a copy in my hot little hands here. And it launches the new 17 brand, which is Harlequin Teen. So really, congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell me about this book.
It's 17 Magazine's first book imprint, and Harlequin Teen is publishing it. They wanted books that touch on real-life issues that teenagers have, and they asked me to launch the imprint and if I could write about possibly immigration, because they knew I had come to the U.S. as an immigrant. And, you know, I really thought I couldn't say no, that there were so few YA writers who had my background and who could give justice to this story. And it's about a Filipino girl who's an overachiever, you know, class president, captain of the cheerleaders, national scholar, and who wins this big scholarship to the college of her choice, and then discovers that she can't accept it because her family is here illegally.
Oh,
that they're
man.
Undocumented. And oh. she'd never known. She thought she was an American, or at least a green card resident. And it's something that happens to kids. It's actually a phenomenon called becoming illegal, because, you know, when they're young and they grew up in America, you know, they just think that they're like everybody else.
Why would they think otherwise?
Yeah, and, you know, their parents don't tell them. And then, you know, when you need a driver's license, when you need to apply for financial aid, you know, when all these things kind of happen, they realize that they're not quite 100% American, and some of them are here illegally. So I really wanted to write about... that kind of story. And my family was never here illegally. We were always documented. But, you know, it's like kind of a fine line, you know. Every immigrant comes here for a better life, you know, and they're not doing anything that we didn't do, you know. I mean, sometimes you just get luckier when you're here with an easier path to citizenship. So it's not overtly political, because I didn't want that. I didn't want to write this super political novel. I just wanted to tell a story mm-hmm. where that was, you know, kind of one of the premises.
That's exciting. I now really can't wait to read this, because this is huge.
Yeah, sadly, in the climate right now, it's a very big issue. So it's interesting, you know, to see it play out. There were some Texas valedictorians who came out, and they, you know, kind of were honest about their undocumented status, and I was just like, ooh.
I remember that.
So scary.
I know, it's
to be
really
so honest.
A vulnerable thing to come out and speak publicly from that, you know, from
definitely.
That stage
when
you're graduating as valedictorian and say, by the way, I'm illegal.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. So we're very excited about the book, and I'm just really, you know, I'm really proud of it. I'm glad that they asked me to do it, and I'm glad I did it, so.
Well, so how old were you when you came here?
I was 13, and I turned 14 the first year we were here. Yep.
That's got to have been crazy.
Oh, it was awful.
I mean, that's like one of the most intense times.
I was a freshman
anyway.
In high school. It sucked. It was awful. But that story is not in this book. This is a fictional novel.
This is not autobiographical,
everybody. I already wrote that one. I didn't want to go back there.
That was fresh off the boat.
Yes.
Well, so any other projects you want to share?
I'm trying to think if I can talk. Yeah, I have the teen spinoff to Witches of East End called Summer in East End. And the second book in that series is coming out in November.
You still just blow my mind. Like, wow. So this is coming out in October. Another one's coming out in November.
Yes.
Are we going to get to see a third Descendants book?
Oh, actually, yes, we are. We're very excited. I'm actually working on that right now. That is what is on my plate.
In your spare time.
In my spare time, yeah. No, we're very excited. It comes out before the second movie.
Okay, so the second movie is still filming right now, and and that's like the first one's going to come out before the next edition of the movie.
Yes, it's like a prequel to the second movie.
That's so cool. What's that going to be called? Do you know, or do you have a title yet?
We have a title, but it hasn't been announced.
Got it. Don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, that's just exciting. Well, we'll all be looking for that. And finally, do you have any advice for young writers who want to make a living with that passion? Like, if you were talking to a young person right now, you know, middle school, high school, college, and they just loved to write and they knew it was their gift and they really wanted to make a living as a writer, what would you tell them to do? What advice would you have for them?
I would tell them never to give up, first of all. There's so much rejection. You got to go through all the rejections and just kind of keep knocking on that door until it opens. And I would say, you know, the same thing that Jeff told me, you know, years ago, which was start a little small, you know, maybe write for some online blogs, some online magazines, you know, and now there's nothing really stopping you from starting your own blog, your own journal, your own magazine. You know, it's kind of crazy. And I think the opportunity's there. But I think at some point, you know, you are going to want to get paid. So, you know, don't take anything less than what you think you deserve, you know? So, You know, a lot of writers, you know, they don't want to pay us ever, you know.
I've noticed that. It used to be that you could make a living as a travel writer or as like even just a magazine writer or something.
Definitely.
That's almost impossible now.
You know, it just gets harder and harder, you know, and it's, you know, one of the things that writers always say is like, well, we would do it for free. Like, yes, we would, but don't tell them that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like that, I think, for a lot of creatives, where they have something that they love to do so much.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Yes, you would do it for free, but it's great to make a living at it. But at the same time, if you're doing something of great quality that makes a serious contribution, you do deserve to get paid.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know? Even when I started out, the small newspaper that I worked for, you know, they would pay us $100 to $300 an article, which, you know, really isn't much, but it was something. We got paid for our work.
Well, and, you know, it cost less to live back then, too, didn't it?
Yeah. That went sadly. <further. laughs> You know, I remember we had writers who would live on $8,000 a year. I mean, when you think about that, it was like, what?
Well, you know, I mean, I think I'm a bit older than you are, but when I was straight out of college, I was paying $300 a month rent.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? No, I think I was paying like about $5,000, $6,000, you know? Yeah.
And that's
a doable, you could live on, you know, a small salary or whatever on that kind of rent. And now you can't. It's kind of hard.
But meanwhile, what you could do is you could find something that pays the bills.
Exactly.
And not let that stop you.
Yeah.
Write, like, get up earlier.
Yeah.
Spend an hour or two writing before you go to work.
Definitely.
Write an hour or two when you get home.
Definitely.
If you want it.
If you want it, it's there for the taking. I think the people who end up not doing it, we always say kind of like their life. Oh, they like their life, you know? Like, they don't want to shake it up, really. They don't want it that much. Because if you really want it, you're going to do everything to make sure it happens.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whose quote this is, but I see it all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it's really simple. It's just like, writers write.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a writer or think of yourself as a writer or say you're a writer, you just need to show up and write.
Yeah.
Even if it's just in your journal, something.
Definitely. Definitely. Don't just talk about it. You got to do it.
Yeah.
You know.
And everybody can do it, especially these days.
Oh, definitely.
Well, anything else you'd like to share with us?
That's pretty much it. You know, I'm very excited for everything. Really proud of this book and The Descendants. So, yeah. Having a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Look for Something in Between in bookstores October 4th. And if you enjoyed Isle of the Lost and Return to the Isle of the Lost, check out Melissa's many, many other books. Thank you so much for talking to
us today,
Bonnie.
Melissa. Thanks so much for having me. Yay, it was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, subscribe to this free podcast and leave a quick rating and review. A moment to click on a star rating really helps, and a minute to write a sentence-long review makes a real difference in the ranking for this podcast. Thank you so much for helping me. Do you want to know more about getting a young actor up and running in Hollywood? Buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And if you need specific help getting your career or your child's career up and running or to the next level, you can get a one-on-one consultation with me over Skype or in person in Los Angeles. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the consultations page. Thanks, and see you next week.